It's all about the sound. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Carolina. Don't you wanna get down and dirty? It's Texas, I'm thirsty.
This is the SEC Spin.
SEC Spin.
With Jay Ruark and Brian Daniel. It's all about the sound.
Welcome back to episode 7 of SEC Spin Radio with Jay and BD. I am BD, and as always, I am here with Jay Ruark. And it's been a big week already.
Oh, my gosh.
We've got stories all over the place.
Well, I guess the number one story is the retirement of Steve Spurrier.
Did he retire? I thought he just quit.
No, I guess as he came out today, he said, I'm not retiring, I'm just resigning. I'm probably going to coach high school football somewhere.
Or he may make himself available for an NFL job. That's what he did last time.
It wouldn't surprise me. You know what, though? I'll say this. I know you're not a Spurrier guy, and I tend
well,
to...
Well, now, hold on. I think that's probably a true statement, but let me just say that I'm not as much of a Spurrier guy as you are.
Yeah.
Let me qualify that.
That's true. And I'll probably overdo it a little bit just because I think you don't like him. I don't know. Anyway, I respect the heck out of what the guy's done. There's no doubt about that. I think he'll always be remembered for what he did at Florida, but I think what he's done at South Carolina has actually been harder than what he did at Florida. I mean, Florida is... I don't think it's hard to recruit to Florida. I don't think it's – Florida is a – just in my lifetime, Florida has just seemed like a football school.
The generation before us, though, will tell you that Florida was nothing before. You had Galen Hall and Charlie Pell were there a couple of years, and they had a guy named Wayne Pease that was pretty decent. I think Neil Anderson played in that regime, who had a good run with the Chicago Bears. But it wasn't really until Spurrier got there that they became the Florida that we have today.
Yeah, I just –
Spurrier made Florida. He won the Heisman there in, like, what, 66?
Yep, 66, actually.
But he did. But he was actually – people forget, he was actually pretty successful at Duke. He installed that, you know, fun and gun at Duke. And a guy named Ben Bennett was quarterback there, I think, when Steve Spurrier was there. And that's how – that was his proving ground before he got that Florida job. But that was not – That was not a landmark hire as much as it is, you know, a guy coming home, quotation marks, air quotes.
Well, and I guess now and kind of moving forward, Florida is considered a football power, if you will. I think we argued this last year that Florida is probably a top 10 job in the country.
Yeah, for me it is, absolutely.
I would definitely think that it is. But what he did at South Carolina, very similar to a Kentucky Vanderbilt, and the fact that they were always the bottom three of the East, and they were the kind of the whipping. You know, in fact, I'm pretty sure Kentucky had a winning record versus South Carolina until Spurrier got there. In the four consecutive 11-win seasons that he had at South Carolina, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, he's competing with Clemson in-state, all the kind of East Coast, and then he's having to go recruit kids away from the SEC powers. And that's just tough. That's just tough.
I think one of the things he ran into at South Carolina was he never made the splash. He had 11 win seasons. He had Jadeveon Clowney that was a top pick. They had his best recruit was Lattimore, probably the best recruit he ever got. But he never was able to build any momentum to get him over that hump.
Yeah.
And, you know, we joke about Georgia being Georgia, and they always lose that one game. South Carolina's the same way. They would always – I think there were a couple times they came into the season with national championship aspirations, and they lost early or wrong.
Yeah.
And I think they made the bowl series maybe once, maybe twice. I meant to look that up before we recorded tonight. But, you know – at Florida, he went to back-to-back national championship games, won several SEC SEC titles as the SEC was rising to prominence.
Right.
The SEC was was very much a regional. It was a regional thing up until really Florida and Spurrier in what was that, the mid-80s? They won in 86 and got drilled in 85, I think. Had a flop with the Redskins. Good run with South Carolina, but I don't think it's what they had hoped for. So this is – I posted on our Facebook page on July 23rd, and we opened the show up, and we did our SEC East preview, and we talked about South Carolina. We talked about that press conference that he had where he responded to an Atlanta Journal-Constitution writer, an editorial, about how Spurrier was done and couldn't recruit anymore because he was going to retire. And I'm sure he's not the first coach that called a press conference at that time of year, but that's the first time I can remember it. And I remember you and I talked about it, and I think we tweeted, I didn't tweet it, but we text back and forth. It felt like desperation to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
the first thing I thought of when you texted me that Spurrier was out.
Well, one of the things that I, for me, that Spurrier does is I respect the fact that he's pretty much a straight shooter. He seems to be, even though he's kind of can come off a little cocky, a little arrogant, possibly maybe even a little too straightforward. Just the fact that he is honest and he seems to be pretty genuine in the fact that he's just so honest with what he says. And I honestly believe that Spurrier had a hard time recruiting. He knew it was the end, but I think he had a hard time going in and recruiting into these kids' living rooms, sitting down with their parents and promising them, hey, come play for me and this, that, and the other. I just don't see Spurrier being a guy that has a lot of BS that can go in and do that and not really think about, well, I know I'm about to retire. I feel like some of that was probably, he was probably struggling with that. And you almost have to respect, I saw a lot of reaction. You know, when I first saw it last night, I thought he was forced out. I thought that basically the AD went to him and said, look, this is not going well. This is not going anywhere. You know that you're going to be done soon. Let's go ahead and leave. And maybe that did happen, but I didn't get that vibe today with everything that I read and listening to his press conference. I got the vibe that Spurrier seriously, genuinely just knows that his time is it's up. And he's just wanting to just get out. And you almost have to respect.
And when it's up, it's up.
Yeah.
In like Steve Spurrier's world, when it's done, it's done. Why pretend?
Exactly. And, I mean, you almost it's almost a little bit refreshing in the fact that if that's really what went down, good for him. I mean, if he thinks it's time and he knows it's time, it's time.
I would add just this one thing that I think Spurrier is truly, you talked about the level of authenticity and you called it his frankness or his matter. Matter of fact, a straight shooter is a lot of terms you can use. I would say also that he is truly, you know, he's known as the ball coach. He coaches them up. I don't know if he's ever been that much of a recruiter. He got guys because of the program and because of the style he played.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily because he was a great recruiter like maybe Saban, like maybe Miles, like some of the other coaches we've come to see that are really good. Mark Richt is probably the best example of a guy that can recruit,
right.
Brings him in. I don't know if Spurrier's ever been a great recruiter. And so now when you've got other guys that he's got to recruit against, and I think he's a guy that might have his priorities together. I think he's a guy that might not have sold out to the profession. I know when he went to the Redskins, he laughed at these guys that spent, you know, 80-hour work weeks. He said, I'm not going to do that. That's not what we did at Florida. That's not what we're going to do here. It didn't work in the NFL, so we went back to the college. But I think he's the kind of guy that he's got his hours, he's got his family, he's got his hobbies. And when the time came when that wasn't working anymore and it wasn't successful, well, I guess it's up.
Well, and I think a true testament to maybe him not being the greatest recruiter at Florida, he was known for coaching up the quarterbacks, putting those guys in Heisman runnings, and having this offense that throws it all over the field. Name me the quarterback at South Carolina that was ever really. I mean, I feel like Garcia may have been there for 10 years. That just seemed to be ridiculous. Connor Shaw. I thought he was a good college player, but, I mean, he never had that. And I'm not saying that
he was the lesser of two Connors.
Exactly. I mean, it's not like you get a I know Danny Werfel doesn't walk through your door all the time, but, I mean, Spurrier, that seemed – I thought if Spurrier gets his quarterback in there, if he ever did, especially when he had Lattimore and those guys, I mean, if he could have ever gotten his kind of quarterback that played at the level that he expects – I think things could have been a little bit different, but I never really saw him get that guy. And maybe
– Well, he didn't get the guy at Florida either, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at what Werfel and some of those guys did, there was a Super Bowl quarterback came out of that program, wasn't there? Rex Grossman? Was he a Spurrier product or was he a
– Yeah, no, he was
So when you look at how those guys fared when you get to the NFL and you need to be a pure quarterback, they didn't do so hot.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure he got that guy at Florida either.
You might be right.
I think he put him in a system. He coached him up. He put him in positions. That's where he was at his best. He was an offensive mind at a time when he really changed the game. The spread offense – that's pretty much Steve Spurrier.
Yeah.
But he put those guys in a position to succeed that I'm not sure that other coaches are able to do. So why didn't it work at South Carolina? Sometimes it just doesn't click. You know, sometimes they're at an intersection of the program, the state of the game, and the coach mentality, and it all works together. That if you put him, like if he would have been coaching in the 2000s at Florida and this Southeastern Conference, could it have happened again? We'll never know, but it could have been just for an occasion such as this.
Well, and I don't think we've seen the last of Steve Spurrier for sure. There's no way Steve.
I want to see him on television.
Well, I definitely think that would actually be entertaining. I think you're right that he does have his priorities together. I think I watched that. I referenced that 30 or the SEC story on him several times. Really seems to be into his family and good for him. But I don't see Steve Spurrier just sitting around on the couch and not doing anything. I think he's going to get himself into something, maybe a similar role like to Archie Manning, how he is kind of an analyst here and there, maybe be on a college football playoff board or something like that. But he's going to keep himself busy. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not a coach in some sort of aspect again, maybe somewhere on the college level.
Well, okay. I've got an idea for Steve Spurrier. We were talking back before episode 4. If we could have anybody, if we're going to add a third co-host and we could add anybody, who would it be? Steve Spurrier just became available.
I think Steve Spurrier would be phenomenal.
If you had to choose between Peyton Manning or Steve Spurrier, who would you pick?
Peyton Manning.
If you had to choose between Peyton Manning and Steve Sarkisian, who would you pick?
Well, Steve Sark might be a good time. I don't know. He might be fun to hang out with.
I'm probably
going to go with Peyton Manning.
If you had to pick between Peyton Manning and Les Miles to be the third co-host, who would it be?
Well, this is not fair because I'm always going to pick Peyton Manning just because I'd like to meet Peyton Manning. But Les Miles is actually a good one to be on the show. I bet he'd be entertaining.
Entertaining, you say. All right, so Steve Spurrier out as South Carolina's coach. Effective what? Effective
immediately.
Immediately. Not at the end of the season. Not after Saturday.
No. Monday night.
Monday night as of whatever time it was when he made the announcement. That's just the way he does things. I actually thought that it could have been the athletic office asking him about that. And they're saying, Steve, maybe we need to think about a succession plan. And instead of him saying, well, let me sleep on it, he just said, let's do it.
Yeah, I'm done.
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 If you say so, we'll just make it happen.
We'll just do it right now.
I figure we can have the press here in, 45 minutes? We can make this happen.
Yeah. I like how he said at his press conference he didn't want to sit around for 2 or 3 years and have 2 or 3 losing seasons. He was just done. He made up his mind and he was done.
We're out. Of course, he likes golf. He likes to fish. Maybe he likes podcasts. We'll see. We'll reach out to him. All right. So speaking of Florida, you want to talk to us about Will Grier? Something was fishy about that anyway, right? Because it's Treon Harris, Will Grier, first of the season. I actually thought it might be Treon Harris because he had experience. Will Grier gets the start, and all of a sudden Florida goes on this run that nobody expected. So it's kind of like when Kentucky starts winning at football, how the NCAA sniffs around. Maybe something fishy's going on there.
Yeah.
I feel like we got caught off the ball.
Well,
I feel like we should have known better.
Well,
fill us in.
So, Will Grier has been suspended for 1 full year for a violation of the banned substance policy per the NCAA. Was taking a steroid derivative, from what I've been able to understand, really. It can be purchased. It doesn't necessarily have to be purchased on the black market, but it can be purchased in stores. So, it's not like an anabolic shoot 'em up needle steroid type thing, but it's an illegal muscle gainer, if you will. Probably the best way to describe it. But going back and reading about it in the story, I mean, it's just almost crazy. I mean, it's just mind boggling how nobody was really paying attention, or if they were, they were just letting him do it. Apparently, he went from 180 pounds to 215 pounds in less than a calendar year, basically in an off season, is the way that it was put to
me. I've seen people do that.
He doesn't seem like that big of a guy naturally. I mean, he doesn't seem like a big, broad-shouldered guy. I mean, he really doesn't look to be that big. Played well, and I don't think being on an illegal substance does anything for you as a quarterback. Just gives you big, more size. But apparently they kind of looking at some pictures and they were comparing. I mean, it's pretty mind-blowing. A That's a pretty quick, especially for a quarterback. I mean, a quarterback's not trying to be all mass and bulked up. He still does. He still looks like a normal guy to me, I guess, because he was so small before. But, I mean, I just can't imagine. What are you thinking? I mean, when you first sent me the text, I thought kid was taking Adderall or something right. like that. That's a pretty common thing. I mean, it was just some sort of stimulant that he may have taken by accident or just taken for other things. Man, I was not thinking that. I mean, that just seems, to me, that is just mind-blowing. I mean, there are so many things you can do to help build mass and get in shape. And you're, as a quarterback, you're not really after that. If this was a lineman, like a defensive lineman or something, okay, you're trying to get as big as you can to knock somebody out. You're your quarterback. You're just trying. You just need to be working on your skills and working out and being in shape, but not putting on mass.
Dude, the performance enhancers help everybody. I don't care who you are. I think Tiger was on it. Most people would say, well, it doesn't help a golfer. I mean, it's all technique with the golfer. It helps golfers. I've heard it with pitchers and baseball players. I've heard people say, well, it doesn't help you hit the ball. I mean, you still have to hit the ball. Well, yeah, if you make contact, something that was a fly out to the warning track becomes a home run 40 extra times a year. It helps everybody, and it helps pitchers. I mean, when the word first started coming out with Clemens and some of those guys, like, well, why would a pitcher do it? Why would anybody do it? It's called performance enhancer. I was surprised that Florida even tests for it, to be honest with you. When I saw the story and I saw this, what it was, it's like, they test for that? Good for them.
Yeah.
But you said that you saw a tweet to the effect that in the Urban Meyer era, you know, someone that will always remain near and dear to the SEC Spin Radio collective hearts, I'm sure, the Urban Meyer era, it would have been covered up. It wouldn't even have been released. They'd have just found a way just to keep him playing.
Well, that was, and it was, this was, and I wish I had the actual quote from the tweet, but it was a guy that actually works as a reporter for the program and basically said, and more or less, that had this happened on Urban's watch, this would have been swept under the rug and we wouldn't have found out about this, at least until the season was over, is the way that he put it, not come out in the middle of the season.
That's also the Ohio State way.
Yeah, let's just wait till the season's over and get it.
Right,
yeah. The other thing that I think is pretty fascinating about the Will Grier story, it's currently being investigated. As of Saturday night, on the message board for GatorBait 24/7, there was actually a message posted by an anonymous member to the site and said, you better enjoy this win because as of next week, the quarterback is going to be suspended for the season for roids. So how that person knew that, how it got out, when did Florida actually know about the test? I mean, that's pretty interesting right there because, number one, you would think that it came from somebody on the inside, and who would then be dumb enough to then put that on the thing. I mean, just all the way around, just a really weird story. I don't think we've heard the end of it for sure. There's no way. But you know what? If I'm a Florida fan, these are things that are out of the fans' control, completely out of the fans' control. So frustrating. I mean, it's like if a guy gets injured, it's like, man, you know, that's just part of the game. Cheating, you know, taking steroids or whatever. I mean, that's just so stupid. I just don't understand. And I mean, you're the starting quarterback for the University of Florida, and you're on a heck of a run so far. I mean, what are you thinking? I mean, that's, to me, that is just so, like, go to somebody and be like, look, I was taking this. I need to stop. I need to do this. I need to do something different. I got to do something. Don't just keep doing it. It just blows me away.
Well, for those of us that have seen the movie Back to the Future, it's not a mystery as how that poster would have known. All right, speaking of quarterbacks, we'll move on to a third story at the top of the show here, and that is coming out of the Columbia, the University of Missouri. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
South Carolina, they're the same. Columbia, so that's the way to remember it. So University of Missouri quarterback Matty Mott, of course, they've been splitting time. Like when Missouri was in Lexington playing UK, I was like, wait a minute, I thought Mott was the quarterback.
Yeah.
One series every quarter, they put the backup in.
Right. I think there's a lot of controversy on how that's being handled. For one, I don't really like that at all.
Mark's been such a dog the past 2 years. That's probably it, right?
Well, yeah, he's only gone to back-to-back SEC championship
games.
Right.
Out of their 3 years that they had the conference. The championship game.
Matty Mark, obviously,
so I'd bench him too, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would just. And
why would you want that?
The series per quarter thing is just weird to me, too. Totally takes it out of the rhythm. I've never seen a two-system a two-quarterback system work on any level. Never seen it. The only thing that I think you could say worked was Chris Leak and Tim Tebow at Florida when they won the national championship in 2006. But all Tebow was doing was just running in from the goal line. I mean, that's all he was
doing. I think the other one would be Kentucky when Lorenzen was there. Two quarterbacks.
Yeah, him and Shane Boyd.
No, Lorenzen. It was two quarterbacks. <Ba-da-doom, psh. laughs> Sorry. That was good. Jeff's giving me the evil eye.
But
it's a good joke.
It's a good joke.
It's a good one. Okay.
Apparently, Matty Mauch has recently been suspended for violating team rules and has then gotten caught by the coaching staff for liking or favoriting and retweeting tweets that were dogging the backup, which in this day and age in social media, that is one of the most ignorant things you can do. You're supposed to be the leader of the team. You're the quarterback. I know you're frustrated, but man, stay off social media. Don't even mess with that. And then somebody's going to catch you. It's not like you can, I mean, I could search for it right now and find it. I mean, just don't do. Some of these things that these kids do, like you see, you know, when I was younger and I don't really remember stories about kids in college and college football players getting in trouble. I just don't remember hearing about that. It's all over the place now. You know, you're going to get caught doing something because of the world that we live in. Don't stay off Twitter, stay off Instagram, stay off Facebook. Just don't do that.
I think that's just a tacky thing to do. Period. Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, I can't believe he did that.
I mean,
what did you think was going to happen? I guess you think maybe no one's going to notice.
Yeah.
You're just favoriting. Retweeting, you would think someone's going to notice that. It's going to show up on your feed. But just favoriting, you know, you're probably thinking no one will notice. But, man, you're the starting quarterback. Someone, you know, people are going to tell people that. It's going to get back to the coaching staff. That's kind of tacky.
Well, and
I can't believe it. I mean, social media, you're right. You got to watch everything you do on social media. But the other part of that is, man, that's just kind of showing you're not a good teammate.
No, not at all. And most teams and schools have a social media person that monitors the players on social media.
I mean, it's just dumb. But, you know, I mean, I'm not making I can say when that's happening to you and you're essentially benched for a series out of every quarter, your only recourse, you're frustrated. Maybe you've said something to the coaches and it doesn't matter. Maybe you haven't. That's the ultimate passive-aggressive play, really, when you get right down to it. But sometimes passive-aggressive, you feel like, is your only recourse.
Right.
And so his social media play, it was wrong, it was bad, but he's probably thinking, well, I mean, what else am I going to do? I mean –
I'm not blaming him at all for how he feels, because I totally agree with his frustrations and how he feels. I think it's terrible what they're doing, but I mean, you just can't do that. You just cannot do that.
All right, big week already with a regardless of how you feel about Spurrier in this part of the country, that is a landmark decision. This is the first quarterback that I can remember being suspended because of steroid use, and the first player that I can remember in the Southeastern Conference, or probably others, being suspended for steroid use. And now we've got this social media. So, I mean, there's just some news going on.
Yeah.
And now, so we want to react to a couple of big games last week. We had Florida at Missouri, which I texted you during that game. So this is going exactly to script. So Florida wins that game 21-3. It's a battle of two defenses. It seems like it was close for a while, and then Florida scored. They eventually pulled away. There was never really any doubt who was going to win. But so Greer, you know, and all of his numbers are modest. You know, it's like 158, 208. He's right around 200 yards, couple touchdowns, interception. They're winning these games on defense. Kelvin Taylor is becoming one of those Florida backs that's the dual threat. He can catch the ball coming out.
Yep.
And Greer's doing a good job of getting to him, getting the ball to him. So that game went, you know, Missouri is not what we've seen the past 2 years. Their defense is strong, but they can't win games by themselves up there at the University of Missouri. So that game, I think you would agree, went the way we expected it to go. So that brings us to Georgia at Tennessee.
Oh, boy. Georgia at Tennessee, number one, obviously, thoughts and prayers for Nick Chubb and the just the frustration that Georgia's had back-to-back years with the running backs.
Well, did that happen about the same time last year?
Yeah, it really did.
Was it the Tennessee game?
Yeah, it was, and I think Gary and Vern were covering. I think it was the CBS afternoon game.
Chubb's line was one rush for 2 yards and done for the season.
And, you know, not that the Tennessee player did anything wrong, but if that Tennessee player doesn't come over and make that hit on the sideline and just let him go, hindsight's 20/20, but that we're not even having this conversation. I don't think there was a dirty play by any means, but just the frustration for Georgia fans and that. But all that aside, Tennessee went on a 35-7 run on Georgia, a 35-7 run, and I don't know. I mean, I like Mark Richt. I really do. I think Mark Richt is probably one of the most respectable guys in the game. He seems to run a very clean program. Seems like a very good just human being in all aspects. But my gosh, I mean, it is just every year, not the injury, but I mean, he's lost back to back games and lost them in ugly fashion. You get blown out by Alabama. Okay, well, shouldn't have gotten blown out, but you got blown out at home. Then you just blow the game to Tennessee. And, I mean, then the management at the end of the game, he seemed frustrated. Something didn't seem right there at the end. I mean, just the management, very similar to Butch Jones a few weeks ago against Florida, just something seemed completely off there at the end for both of those guys, or for Richt and his staff. I don't understand. I don't understand why. And Lambert didn't play bad. The running game for Georgia was still effective. I mean, they did running back by committee, and it wasn't like it was, oh, man, Chubb went out, and then they didn't have but 10 rushing yards the rest of the game. I mean,
Sony Michelle went for 148, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I mean, it was just like when Gurley went out last year and Nick Chubb stepped in. I mean, it wasn't like the running game completely went away. Georgia never has that. They've got a barn full of running backs that are all good players. And Lambert didn't play bad. Georgia just, there's no excuse for having both of these back to back, but Georgia seems to be in somewhat of a tailspin right now. It'll be interesting to see how they bounce back.
Grayson Lambert was 15 of 32 for 279 yards. His quarterback rating was not great because of the completion percentage. He had 2 touchdowns. I don't think he had a single turnover. He was also, and we texted this, he was a dropped pass away from sending this game into overtime.
Yep.
Reggie Davis, that was right in the basket, and he missed it. The catch he made earlier was actually a more difficult catch than the one that he dropped.
That pass from Lambert was one of the most beautiful.
Both of them were. Yeah.
I mean, that ball was a strike. That's how you draw up a post, skinny post to the. I mean, that was beautiful.
Lambert played good enough to win, but the story was Joshua Dobbs. He actually had a historic night. Did you see the graphic to where? How many quarterbacks had passed for 300 and run for 100? There were only 2 other ones that had done it.
Yeah, Vince Young.
Mm-mm. Not even. It was Tim Tebow and Johnny Football. Manziel. That may have been an SEC play, because surely Vince did that.
Yeah, Vince Young had to do it. I would think that, RG3 had done that. Had to be SEC.
312 yards passing, another 118 rushing, 5 touchdowns against 1 interception. Jalen Hurd carried 21 times for 80 yards, but the story was all Dobbs, UT offense, and a defense that kept the balls in the game.
But what were they doing differently with Dobbs?
Yeah. So what did it say?
Shotgun, rolling him out.
And running him. They didn't run him the week before a whole lot. Right. They put the ball back in his hands.
You give a guy like that run pass. And this is why I thought at the beginning of the season – they were going to be so good is because I thought Dobbs was going to be playing. I'm not setting records every week, but I thought this was going to be more the Dobbs that we've seen. Such a threat to run, but then still being able to make the throws similar to, you know, how Vince Young did in college and Johnny Manziel and those guys. I didn't know what level he'd be on, but I thought, man, if Tennessee can, if he can play like that at all, they're going to be okay. Just maybe if that's the Tennessee that's going to step out on the field every week from here on out, Tennessee could end up saving the season. I mean,
saving the season. That's what I'm going to say. What a difference a week makes. Yeah. So you drop the Florida game. You drop Arkansas game in Knoxville. You got Georgia coming to town. Everybody's like, man, we're going to start 0-3 in the conference. and they come back and they beat the Georgia Bulldogs, ranked, was Georgia had fallen. Were they 17, 18?
They were in the teens by that point, yeah.
So, win over ranked team for Butch, and a big win in Knoxville. That place was rocking, too. That is, I think we've talked about, like, our favorite stadiums in Neyland. Neyland, for me, is Neyland's right up there.
Yeah.
Neyland. I'd really go to Neyland than Rupp, I got to say, if I was going to watch a game.
Oh, Rupp doesn't have a great atmosphere.
That's right. We've talked about that. So that place was loud. That run they went on, and Dobbs, it was a great college game to watch.
And this is why the conference as a whole is better when Tennessee's better. And that's what I've said all along. There are a few teams when they are better and their atmosphere. I mean, Neyland Stadium when I was a kid was just like the Mecca. I mean, that was just it. And it kind of lost a lot of that. But I think now they're getting that back. And it was fun to watch that place go nuts Saturday night.
You're listening to SEC Spin Radio with Jay and BD. Jay, we got a great show tonight. So we just reacted to last week, to the big game, and then you had also Florida at Missouri, which could have been more interesting than what it was. So we've got the top five game. We're bringing it back. Only week, this is the first time we've brought a segment back after 1 week. And it's our mid-season spinny show.
There we go.
Before we get to this week's matchups, which really we're just going to look at two games. And that is Alabama, number 10, Alabama, at number 9, Texas A&M, and number 8, Florida, at number 6, LSU. And with this week's news and disclosures, that game loses a lot of its luster.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on. Let's play the top five game real quick.
Do it.
Everybody's favorite game, the top five game. Actually, my favorite game so far has been the Mad J Jeopardy. But it's so labor-intensive. This one's a lot easier.
Right.
All right, this week we've got two. We're going to look at total offense and top quarterbacks in the league. So let's start with the QBR. So I have in front of me, Mad J, the top five quarterbacks by QBR in the league. And so here we go.
I would go number one, I would go Chad Kelly.
So Chad Kelly is your first one. It feels like this is like Family Feud. So Is Chad Kelly on the board? Yes, Chad Kelly is on the board, but it is not number one. He is number two.
Interesting.
So you're one for one.
And I guess I'm thinking QBR here, so I'm thinking
efficiency.
All things efficient. So Kyle Allen has to be up there.
Kyle Allen at Texas A&M is number one. He is a top-rated passer in the league.
Number one. I definitely still would have picked Chad Kelly. Brandon Allen. It's got to be up. It's got to be somewhere up there, just because they throw all those stupid short passes at Arkansas.
Brandon Allen is among the top five. He comes in at number four, 3 for 3. Jay.
All right.
Gets a little tougher here. It gets real tough, actually. Actually, it's not that tough. I'll quit talking.
The last two that I would think would be in the top five would be Grayson Lambert and Dak Prescott.
Grayson Lambert is at number three, and as much hard time as I give Georgia and their quarterbacks over the past 3 years, if not longer, since Murray left. He is number three. Be interesting to see if he stays there. Number five, you went with Dak Prescott, who I was surprised to find is not among the top five in the league in quarterback rating. So that's your first miss, your 4 out of 5. Number five is Will Grier.
Of course.
So Will Grier was just suspended for the rest of the year. So if we play the top five game again with QBR, Will Grier probably will not be on there. And Treon Harris will be taking over the helm with the University of Florida. Okay, next top five list, we're going to go with total offense. So, Jay, just so you know, this would be the total number of yards that a team has had so far this season, not just in conference play. That's what we're looking at. So you're looking at the most ubiquitous yard gainers.
I would go.
Well, you're not even going to. So you're just going to let that word just ubiquitous? You're just going to let it go?
Well.
You're used to it?
Yeah. I'm a doctor, you know. So, I mean. So I'm going to go Ole Miss. Just because I think they had back-to-back weeks, and they dropped like 76 points on School of the Blind there.
Ole Miss is number one in total offense in the Southeastern Conference.
I would say that I would go A&M.
Texas A&M is not on the list for total offense.
Wow.
Which is a shocker.
That is surprising.
I would have thought they would have been number one or two, but they are not.
Okay. Your Bulldogs.
My Bulldogs would come in at number two. And this is typical Georgia. They are a statistic. They are a paper tiger. They put up a lot of points. They put up a lot of yards. And they wind up losing those one or two games that cost them in the end. What about your boys? Are you going to leave them out?
Who?
Mad Jay's favorite team?
My Arkansas Razorbacks.
Number five, Arkansas.
Okay.
Total offense.
Which isn't surprising in the fact that we've talked about their running game. But Brandon Allen, again, I mean, his numbers from a yard standpoint this season are pretty impressive. So,
and two of the top five running backs.
Yep. So that's no surprise that Arkansas is there. Alabama has to be on the list just from the fact that Coker has actually had some decent passing games, and then we know that their running game is just is phenomenal. Got to be on there.
Alabama is number three.
I would want to go.
So you're missing number four. Ole Miss is number one. Georgia is number two. Alabama is number three. Arkansas is number five.
I would want to go LSU because of the season that Fournette's having, but then I think Brandon Allen might only be, or not Brandon Allen. Brandon Harris, excuse me. I think he's averaging about 90 yards passing a game.
Yeah.
But
that's all you got to have out of Brandon Harris.
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
now
that's really all. I'm going to go LSU. It's probably not right, but I'm going to go LSU.
LSU is doing very well defensively, both in the conference and nationally. I think they're maybe number six in total defense. They are not among the top five in total offense. The team you're missing, what hat am I wearing tonight?
Oh, your Vols.
University of Tennessee Volunteers.
Which is surprising because I didn't feel – well, I mean, I guess the Georgia game really helped them out a lot. I just didn't feel like they got a lot of yards against Oklahoma. The Florida game was kind of weird. I guess they did have some big plays and some yards there.
They may be outgained Florida in that. Seems like we were looking at
have.
It statistically, Tennessee beat them.
Yeah, well, and Josh Dobbs, I mean, he had a huge game.
Well, remember when we did running backs, he had two of the top 10 running backs, and Dobbs has been effective. He hasn't, he's been a part of the formula when they've lost, but he's got them there.
Yep.
He's put them in position to win and just hadn't finished it. So Tennessee is number four. Not number five, but number four. So they're having a good year statistically. They just need to finish games, which it's interesting that they came from behind to beat Georgia.
Yeah.
And they didn't get, you would think the way that script would unfold is they would get out ahead and they would find a way to hold on.
Right.
But instead, it totally flipped on them. All right, so that is the top five game this week. QBR, Kyle Allen, Chad Kelly, Grayson Lambert, Brandon Allen, and Will Greer. He who shall move on. Total offense, Ole Miss, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and Arkansas. So there's your top five game this week. Thanks for playing, Jay. You feel good about that?
I do feel good about that. That's not bad.
You got 8 out of 10?
8 out of 10 is not bad.
8 out of 10 is not bad. I mean, your Mad Jeopardy record is going to be hard to beat, 100%. And that was hard. So we're going to move on to our next segment, which is the Midseason Spinny Awards.
There we go.
Really excited about this segment. Last year, now I thought episode 6 was one of our best shows ever. I really liked the top five game. We had our sound. Jeff gave us some great production. But this is our first, we did song dedications. This is actually our second holdover from season one.
Yep.
So this is our SEC Spin Awards with Jay and BD. Jay, you want to get us started?
First spinny. The terrible, horrible, no good, bad loss award. Ole Miss at Florida. Ole Miss in a perfect position to be in the driver's seat. Go in there, take care of your business at Florida, come back to the SEC West, and then just focus on your matchup down the road with LSU and possibly Texas A&M, and you're pretty much in control.
Pretty much.
But you go in, you lay a huge egg. Florida actually then puts themselves in the driver's seat for the irony of that whole game, I mean, the outcome of that game, and then what Georgia did that same day. I mean, Florida went from okay, well, they're having a decent run to, oh my gosh, they're in the driver's seat. Now things have changed again for them. But that game really did decide some things in the East and West at that time. But now the West is back to being wide open, and I don't see how you can argue that Alabama is not the favorite. LSU a close second. Ole Miss is third on that list. If I had to go, if I had to pick that right now.
Oh, it was such a terrible, horrible, no good, bad loss. I'm actually going to go with Florida at Kentucky again. Kentucky, that was the same. I picked them. I gave the spinny to that game last year at Gainesville, and we had two drop touchdown passes this year, and the streak continues. You got to find a way to win that game when you're in a position to win and you've lost 29 straight years.
I agree. And, I mean, the next two that I would say, I mean, I think those would be the top two. And then I would say after that you would have to go Tennessee would then be involved with the Tennessee-Oklahoma game and then the Tennessee-Florida game. I mean, just losing those games in that fashion, just horrible. No
but
good.
In a runoff, Ole Miss at Florida wins the spinny
exactly.
here. The terrible, horrible, no good, bad loss goes to Ole Miss at Florida.
Next on the list, the Superman Award. I don't think there's any question here.
Will not get any dispute. This is unanimous. This is the unanimous spinning, the Superman Award.
Leonard Fournette, 1,022 yards in the first five games, first time in over 1,000 yards in five games in 15 years. And what we forget, he has done that and is the leading rusher in the conference, and he's minus a game to everybody. If they play McNeese State and he only plays that first half, and he runs for 160, 180 yards. I mean, we're starting to approach projections for big records being broken by this kid. And what I thought was cool too is on Saturday, LSU did a lot of cool things for South Carolina. But after the game, Fournette gets interviewed, and you know when we talked to him last year, we both said, "Wow, he's very articulate, very polite young man." He offered to auction off his game jersey, and the benefits and proceeds go to the victims from South Carolina. And guess what? NCAA came out, cracked down, said, no, he can't do that. Are you serious, NCAA?
I am serious, and they are too. The Superman Award spinny goes to Leonard Fournette, and he gets – it's a traveling trophy, Amari Cooper won that award last year.
Yep.
So there's some tradition there, right?
Yep.
Next SEC Spin Award, next spinny goes to, this is the Yeah, That Really Happened Award, and this goes to Reggie Davis drop TD pass that would have tied the UT-Georgia game. And we've already mentioned it. Davis beats the corner and got two steps on him, hits him right on the numbers, and he drops it. That would have tied the game. I think there was less than a minute.
Yeah,
it was in the closing minutes of the game. So more than likely, Tennessee would not have had time to come back and get in position for a field goal. So yeah, that really happened.
Mine would be that really happened when Tennessee kicks what would have been the game-winning field goal against Florida. Misses it, but Butch Jones thought it went in and ran out onto the field celebrating.
We have video to show that really happened.
That is not a good look, guys.
It was not a reenactment.
No, that was real time right there. So that's going to be mine. The best selection committee moment. So as we, you know, as we're going into year two of this playoff, the selection committee, this, that, and the other. I think you have to go with, at least for right now, you have to go with Alabama blowing Georgia out at Georgia. These other games, either they've been too close or they were at home or whatever, or the team is not really has a chance to really go to that play. Alabama right now has a great chance. They're kind of in the driver's seat, even though they had that one loss. I think Alabama is in that driver's seat to go back to the Final Four, to get slipped, but to go to Georgia, who at the time was ranked in the top 10, and beat them like a dog, 38-10. That's a pretty solid moment.
I think the runner up there is probably Florida beating Ole Miss, even though I mean at the time, like what we've said, Ole Miss had become a little bit of a Destiny's darling, and that game. I picked Ole Miss to win it. I mean, I was a believer, and I still think Ole Miss is really good. At the time, I was not a believer in Florida. So Florida made they made their case there. So that spinny, I'm going to go with Jay on that one. I think the spinny goes to Alabama crushing Georgia in Athens. Two good teams. I mean, it wasn't – that was just – that was an embarrassing, embarrassing game. Next spinny is the mystery team. And I'm going to give my spinny for the mystery team award to the – I need some university – some Ole Miss music. University of Mississippi, Ole Miss. They're 2-1 in third place in the SEC West. But like we've said, the great win at Tuscaloosa and then that loss at Florida, which is still, I mean, even though I watched the whole game, it's still hard to believe how that played out. Florida did not win on a Hail Mary. They did not win on a last second drive and field goal. This game was not in doubt, really, the whole day.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the spread was, but
Ole Miss, see,
they were favored. Ole Miss was it 6.5, 7?
Yeah,
it 10?
I mean, they were favored. I don't think it was 10. I think they were favored by a touchdown, though.
6.5, maybe?
6.5, 7.5.
Really didn't cover.
Yeah. My mystery team, and as I'm definitely not arguing that Ole Miss is a mystery team, because we, you know, like I said, I still think that the win at Tuscaloosa was more fluky than it was anything. I'm going to go University of Tennessee. Tennessee has shown at times that they are great in every aspect.
That's good.
They showed against Oklahoma for three quarters, who Oklahoma got themselves into the top 10. And I actually picked them as my kind of dark horse before the season to go to the football playoff, but Tennessee dominated them for three quarters really. And they blew it at the end. They had a good Florida team beat by two touchdowns, who then that Florida team turned around and rocked Ole Miss's world and they blew that. Just a complete letdown against Arkansas, but then to come back and go on a 35-7 run against a Georgia team that the week prior was number 8 in the country. Now, Georgia has obviously got some things to figure out, but Tennessee has the potential, I think, and if Josh Dobbs, and they use Josh Dobbs correctly, I think Tennessee could beat anybody in the conference, really. Now, they've kind of got themselves, they've really dug themselves a big hole, though, to really come out of. Not saying that it's not possible. They've got a big hole. So, I mean, who's going to show up that Halloween night in Lexington? What Tennessee team is going to show up? I hope the team from that played Arkansas
the three-quarter
shows up.
Team.
Yeah, I hope that team shows up. I definitely don't want the team that showed up against Georgia
for three
walking
quarters.
Into Lexington. So, Tennessee, to me, is still just such a mystery.
Oh, I'd love to hear from you. That's really good. Is it Ole Miss or is it Tennessee? In a runoff, I think I have to go with the Vols as the mystery team. Get the mystery team spinny. At the end of the season, we may revisit that and see who the real mystery team was. But right now, just given the case you made, I think Tennessee is a really good candidate there. All right, so the Golden Arm Award, who are you going to give that to?
I mean, if you had to pick one guy, you've probably got to go Chad Kelly is the purest passer, although Grayson Lambert throws a really pretty ball, and he throws a really pretty ball. So obviously the SEC right now, we don't have a lot of quarterbacks that are really just throwing it all around. If I'm going to go the prettiest ball that can be thrown, I like Grayson Lambert's deep ball.
All right, the next spinny is the What Are You Doing at This Party Award. Thanks. Explain this award. This is the award. You ever been, you know, when you're in high school and you're with some friends, you're like, what are you going to do? And they say, we're going to go to this party. And so you want to go? Yeah, I'll go with you. And you get there and you look around and it's like, this isn't my group.
This is awkward.
Like if you're like a ninth grader and they're all like juniors and seniors, like, I don't know what I'm doing at this party with all these people. So this is the team that finds themselves at that party.
This would have to go to the Kentucky Wildcats. There's no doubt about that. Now, here's where things get interesting for Kentucky. Kentucky has themselves all alone at number 2 in the East. If they can win Thursday night against Auburn, they are putting themselves in a position to really make a statement type of season, because then they've got Georgia and then they've got Tennessee. And if it, those are two tough games. These are three. This is a gauntlet for Kentucky, these next three games coming up. But Auburn is beatable. The game is at home on a Thursday night. That is just great for a home team. That would put them in a position that Kentucky has not been in a long time. And I think 2007 was probably the most recent time after they beat LSU. It was number one at the time. Kentucky got all the way up to number eight in the rankings.
Have been higher than that.
And then they blew it. And then they absolutely blew it. Andre Woodson was
to who? To Tennessee.
Yeah. And Andre Woodson was a Heisman Trophy at that point contender. They blew it to Mississippi State. They blew it to Tennessee, and they blew it to Georgia. All three games they had won. They also had Florida and Tim Tebow beat at home, and they lost by a field goal. Those were four games.
Is this your episode 7 dream sequence?
Yeah. If Kentucky beats Auburn Thursday night, I'm gonna be super excited.
All right. So they beat Auburn Thursday night. They still only have the one conference loss. You still got Georgia and Tennessee. We're gonna hope for the Tennessee team that only plays three quarters, and we're gonna hope for the Georgia team that doesn't care and finds a way to lose.
We're just gonna hope Georgia Georges it.
That they George it, and so Kentucky finishes with one loss and wins the SEC East.
That's right.
That's the What Are You Doing at This Party Award. The Sleeper Agent Award. This goes to the most surprising player. My entry here for this spinny is Jared Coker. I texted Jay during the Alabama game, and I said, you know, I'm not the biggest Alabama fan, but I got to admit, Jared Coker throws a pretty nice deep ball, and he's making himself into what I would call serviceable SEC quarterback. And Saban's system, he doesn't need the quarterback to win games.
No.
It's nice to have a guy that can do that. And I think AJ was like that if he needed him to. Even McElroy. Coker's working himself into being that kind of player.
I'm going to go Boom Williams from Kentucky. I know it's kind of a homer pick. Reason being, when Boom Williams is in the game and he touches the ball, he is Kentucky's version. I said this before. He is Kentucky's version of Darren Sproles. I mean, he is electric. He makes them better. He can catch and run out of the backfield. I mean, he's a do-it-all kind of guy. If we can just get him the ball, and he's apparently a pretty vocal leader and a vocal guy in the locker room and in the huddle, if we can continue to get him the ball, keep him involved, and then he can keep his family stuff or whatever was going on, if he can keep that under control – I mean, that he's going to be a huge key to Kentucky the rest of the way. Tolles, we obviously know Tolles has to perform, but if he can perform, I mean, you think back to what Raphael Little was to that 2007 team, and Boom Williams is the same way.
Next spinny. Jay, did you ever see Lone Survivor? Did you ever watch that movie? You
don't
even know what I'm talking about? Did you see it?
Yes.
So you know about the Navy SEAL. You know what they're all about, right? I've read several books. I've seen some movies. I was actually around some when I was in the Navy. There's some strange cats, man. They'd be in our hangar, and they'd be talking, and as you get within like 10 feet, they'd just stop talking. So they didn't know. I guess everything that they talk about is like classified. So the next spinny is the Navy SEAL Award, and this is the guy that just finds a way. It's mind over matter, and he's going to do whatever it takes. And my Navy SEAL Award goes to Joshua Dobbs for his performance against the University of Georgia. You've already mentioned it, 25 of 42 for 312 yards and 118 yards rushing and 5 TDs. But one of those touchdowns, the one from like the 4-yard line, 4 or 5-yard line, I can't remember, it was a fourth quarter score, I believe, when he got hit twice and found his way in the end zone. That was a man's run.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing you can say bad about Josh Dobbs' performance on Saturday. I like Josh Dobbs. I like his attitude. I like his approach. I don't think he's been getting used correctly until Saturday. I'm going to go Leonard Fournette. I know it's an easy pick, but, man, that guy runs hard. And he's not – you know, sometimes you see a running back that, you know, wants to dance all over the place and – kind of will go out of bounds. Not Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette will run you over. He'll flip you over, and he wants to just keep fighting for yards. He is, to me, one of the most impressive running backs I have seen, and the guy's a freaking sophomore. I mean, he is a sophomore. I mean, I'm not gonna compare him to Herschel Walker and Bo Jackson just yet, but the argument could really be made that in 10 years – we are talking about him in a similar light as they were talking about Herschel and Bo. I mean, if he stays healthy and he does what he's supposed to. I mean, think about Adrian Peterson at Oklahoma. That's who he reminds me of. Besides his off-the-field battles, we're talking about Adrian Peterson as one of the great running backs in the league. So I think Fournette definitely has that ability.
So there are your midseason 2015 spinnies. You can join us for that conversation on Facebook, where we'll be posting these. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on the Navy SEAL Award, the Sleeper Agent Award spinny, the What Are You Doing at This Party Award, the Golden Arm, the Mystery Team Award, the Best Selection Committee Moment, the Yeah, That Really Happened Award, the Superman Award, and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Bad Loss Award, which I can't imagine anybody taking issue with anything, either of those games that we mentioned there. So we're running out of time, Jay, but we do have two big matchups this week, and I'll just entree this segment by saying, let the attrition continue.
Let's get the spin on this week's SEC matchups.
We have number 10 Alabama at 5-1 and 2-1, at number 9 Texas A&M at 5-0 and 2-0. And they are, the last time Alabama was there, it was Johnny Football Show, and I think Alabama beat them on that day, if I'm not mistaken.
They ended up beating them.
That was a revenge win.
Yeah.
And then you have number 8 Florida at 6-0, 4-0, which at the time, before the Will Grier announcement, this game at Baton Rouge, who is 5-0 and 3-0 and ranked number 6, was a lot more intriguing than what it is currently.
Let's touch on the Florida LSU game first. I would never want to be the quarterback going in, basically filling in as the starter, not the true starter, but coming in off the bench and starting at LSU as my first game back to being the starter. That is not a friendly place to play, but the thing about what we've always said in football and basketball, defense travels. And if Florida's defense can go into LSU and they can somehow contain Fournette, which I'm not saying that they can, that would be amazing. But I just don't see that happening. I don't see Treyon Harris getting anything done offensively the way LSU's defense has played. I think eventually LSU wears Florida down with the running game. I think we see like a 9-3 kind of game, an ugly game. But that's
liable to be really boring.
But that's the kind that LSU will win by, and they'll be fine with that. But I've got LSU in that game. If Will Grier was playing, I still don't think I would pick Florida to go into LSU and beat them. I just wouldn't do that. Leonard Fournette, to me right now, and I've said it, Leonard Fournette is the best player in the country right now. I don't see anybody stopping him. If the kid stays healthy, I see him winning a Heisman Trophy, and I see LSU, if not playing for the SEC championship, or if not playing for a in the playoff, playing for an SEC championship possibly.
Well, let's look at both those defenses just real quick. LSU is 6th in the nation in total defense. Florida is 28th, but they're 1-5 in the league. Florida gets to the quarterback better than LSU, but they both rush very well. I don't know if that's really going to be a factor. They're both very stingy against the run, giving up just under 100 yards a game. I think they're both right in the 99 yards per game category. They're 12th and 13th in the nation against the run, 2nd and 3rd in the league. So if Fournette goes 158, or dare I say another 200, he's going to earn it, and he would probably win the Heisman if he did that in this game. And passing yards, they're also good. And this was surprising to me. They're 4th and 5th in the league in yards per game. And LSU is actually 5th. Florida's 4th. But I would expect it, because LSU's like DBU, and yeah, Florida's got Vernon Hargraves this year. And, they've been really stingy against the pass. I was surprised that they weren't higher in the league. But they are both statistically very strong, and they do the intangibles well, too. Florida gets a lot of takeaways. Bottom line is, this is not a good time for Will Grier to get himself suspended.
Nope.
And I don't see how Florida goes in there under those circumstances and wins. And because this is the deal with LSU's defense, you've got your numbers, but they do weird stuff, and they force you into doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
And so when you've got a system change and you're bringing a new quarterback, Kelvin Taylor's not going to be enough.
No.
So I mean, I just don't see any way Florida wins it. But they're still, I haven't given them the chance in very many games, except last week at, when I think they were at Missouri. We picked them to win, but I think every other game I've picked them to lose.
Yep. Well, and it's just, if this game was in Gainesville, we may be having a little bit of a different conversation. But the fact
not
that,
much.
I no, not much, but this is in Baton Rouge, and there are only a couple teams that I'm okay, that I think I would pick – against LSU going into Baton Rouge. And I think the only team I would do that right now with maybe Alabama, and that's it. I don't even know if I would pick that. But there's not another team in the conference outside of Alabama that I would even consider being able to go into LSU and Baton Rouge and win the game. Just not possible.
All right, I don't want to belabor the point, but I guess I don't mind it. If they can stack the box and stop Fournette, we know about their secondary and making Harris beat them. Is there a scenario to where that plays enough in Florida's favor? Maybe they get a couple of big plays out of their secondary, maybe a pick six, and it puts enough pressure on the LSU offense where they abandon Fournette?
No, I don't think that, because I think Les Miles has already decided that he knows. I mean, his players, or his guy, his do or die, we're going to win a chance. I don't even think he's talking about winning a game. I think he thinks that he can win a national championship with Leonard Fournette, and it doesn't matter who they're playing. And you know what? I respect him for feeling that way, and I love Leonard Fournette. I don't think he abandons him. I don't think he does. Now, he may try to get a little bit creative. We all know he's the Mad Hatter with rolling. Again, I'm big on these guys rolling Brandon Harris out a little bit, getting Fournette maybe open in the flats, rolling him out, doing some of that power pass where they fake the handoff to him, he runs, fakes blocks, jumps out into the flat, roll him out. I mean, those 5-7 yard dump passes, and then let Leonard Fournette do what he does. I don't think they abandon him. They may use him differently, but they're not going to abandon him.
All right, let's move to the Texas A&M game. So here we are. Alabama's favored by 4. Last week in our top 5, what we revealed, the Texas A&M leads the league in sacks. We talked about the impact that John Chavis has made on the conference, but how this is tilted, because Texas A&M's problem in the Sumlin era has been on defense. So this is the first time Alabama has played LSU with Chavis. I'm sorry, Texas A&M with Chavis with the Aggies. So Alabama's number 3 in the SEC in offense. Texas A&M is number 7, which surprised me. Alabama's actually better offensively than Texas A&M. Bama gives up 187 yards per game versus the pass. That's 3rd in the conference. A&M is 5th. They give up 77 yards against the run, which is the best in the conference, and 4th in the nation. So their defense matches up well against the Aggies. A&M, on the other hand, is 9th in the SEC versus the run, which doesn't look good when you're lining up against Derrick Henry, right?
Yep.
And they're 5th in the SEC versus the pass, but I don't know if that's going to matter, because they're going to have to stop. They're going to have to stop Henry, and that's going to open it up. Texas A&M has wins versus Arizona State, Arkansas, Mississippi State. I think this is going to be Derrick Henry early and Derrick Henry late, and that's going to be the way the game goes.
Well, okay, so let's go back here a little bit, and let's think about how Nick Saban likes to do things. Run the other team down, okay? It's apparent to me.
When I think Alabama is at their best, that's what they're doing.
And when I going back and looking at that Georgia game, I think Nick Saban is taking Lane Kiffin. I think he's taking his decision-making away. I think Nick Saban knows that the Ole Miss game got away from him a little bit. That's not how they wanted it to go. I truly do think that Nick Saban is back in complete control of the offense and of the play calling. And I think we're going to see that again Saturday. I think he's going to run Derrick Henry. He's going to use his other running backs. When he needs to roll Coker out or make those safe throws, Coker's proven he can do that, much like A.J. McCarron did, much like Greg McElroy did. And who knows, Coker may be better at it than those guys. We just really haven't seen it enough yet. If they do that, they're going to be fine. Nick Saban, I think, now has a real big chip on his shoulder with all the talk about the Bama dynasty being over and Nick Saban's not the best coach in the country anymore. I think he's a little pissed off about that, to be honest. So I think Alabama's going to come out ready to play. Texas A&M, I don't know if I trust them enough yet. I know I use that a lot, but I mean they're the only school in the conference that's played all FBS schools, which we talked about. But I just don't feel like they've played in a big game yet, and Kyle Allen hasn't faced a defense like Alabama yet. And like you said, Alabama has Derrick Henry, and Texas A&M doesn't. So, and Derrick Henry, in my opinion, is the second best player in the conference. So, to me, this is Alabama's game. I don't think it's going to be any sort of blowout or anything like that. I just think Bama wins the game and wins it in control. I think they further make their statement for being the team out of the conference that goes to the Final Four.
Yeah, the only thing I'm going to say it again. I picked Georgia in the Alabama game, which just makes you look just stupid. I mean, that just game wasn't even close. But I largely did it because I felt like Lambert and Rick could do something against the Alabama secondary. They didn't do it. I don't know if they ever really had a chance. I mean, that game never really started for Georgia. It was over. It was over before it even started. Alabama just, I think Rick probably got out-coached. The only thing you may run into is you cannot compare what Texas A&M does on offense to Georgia. They have a system. It's worked. They've beaten Alabama. Someone has beaten Alabama in the Saban era, and he's done it in Tuscaloosa, which I don't know if that means a lot every 4 or 5 years. It looks like somebody does it. Ole Miss, for instance. The only thing that you may see is if they are able to get that offense going against Alabama and they find themselves, because Alabama's, they like comfort. If you let them get comfortable, it's over.
Yeah.
You've got to put pressure on them and get them on their heels a little bit, get them second-guessing the system and what they do. And if all the teams in the SEC that can do that, the two that come to mind are Auburn and Texas A&M.
Yep.
You know, Ole Miss, you take away the turnovers. We've said that. Maybe that game's different. But when you just look at the way teams line up, Auburn and Texas A&M are the two teams that will give Saban, climate-controlled Saban, fits. It's at College Station, so you may have a situation like that. But I agree with you. A&M hasn't been in a big game yet. Alabama lives, every game's a big game for them. Right. They're like the Kentucky.
They're everybody's
Super
Bowl.
I shouldn't make that comparison. They're Alabama. They don't need another comparison. Every game they play in is a big game. They're coming off a big one 2 weeks ago that was also on the road. So Coker is not going to be rattled. Look, trust me, I want to pick against Alabama, and I do it enough on the show, but I just can't. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that one time that they beat Alabama, and it was in Tuscaloosa, they had a guy by the name of Johnny Manziel who was the most electric college football player of that season. I mean, the throws that where he fumbled the snap, and he turned around, rolled to his left, rolled to his right, came back to his left, and finds a guy in the back of the end zone. I mean, that's not – I'm not saying Kyle Allen is a bad quarterback. Kyle Allen is not Johnny Manziel. Also, too, this Bama team, to me, I feel like Saban, this is a more controlled Saban team. I mean, A.J. McCarron threw – I mean, when they went and played at A&M the following year, I mean, he threw for like 400-something yards. I mean, that's not a Nick Saban doesn't have quarterbacks that are throwing for 450 yards. And McCarron did that. I think he's got a more controlled type of team that he likes better. And I think Coker can do what he needs to do when he does it. I just do not see Texas A&M pulling this one out.
Well, I bet they show up.
Yeah, I bet they'll be there.
So we'll see how that goes. I mean, I've been wrong more than I've been right this year. This has been it's been a crazy year. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this installment of SEC Spin Radio with JMBD. Thank you for being with us. You can like us on Facebook, follow us there. I'll be getting the SEC Spinnies up for us to for you guys to engage in on the Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at SEC Spin. Thanks for producer Jeff Lyon for putting the show together. And Jay, that's a wrap.
Drop the gun.